All right, now it is time to bring in David Terachuk with the Media Beat. David joins us every Friday morning, of course. You can find David on his own website, themediabeat.us. He's also a PBS television correspondent reporting on ethics and belief. And you can also find him posted every once in a while on the Huffington Post. Good morning, David.
Well, good morning. As we say goodbye to Thanksgiving 2018, let's say hello to Black Friday 2018. How are you?
I'm fine. The great thing about Thanksgiving is that even if you're not a football fan, even if you're not a goofy program, all the news basically, unless something happened, is preempted by even on CNN and MSNBC with all these other programs because they don't get their people to work on Thanksgiving. So you don't hear the president on Thanksgiving.
Well, now, you can if you look for him. Yeah, but some people do, and he tries his best to make himself inevitably findable, and certainly by being outrageous once again.
Yeah, unbelievable.
That's the communication style of this presidency. Well, so we shouldn't be surprised that when he's asked what he is grateful for on Thanksgiving, he says he's thankful for himself. And to quote him directly, "I've made a tremendous difference to the country." That's absolutely in the spirit of Thanksgiving, isn't it?
And I woke up to that this morning. That's the first thing I saw when I woke up this morning at my normal 3:45, and I take a look at my iPad, which is my, which wakes me up with news bulletins in the morning, and there it was. I had gone a day where I had seen 3 football games, I had seen a whole roast of Anthony Bourdain shows that they put on CNN because I loved I loved Anthony, and I didn't listen to any news. I didn't, and then the first thing I wake up and I say, oh, he thanks himself, and he basically says, what? Oh, he basically talked to the troops without congratulating the troops. And I said, back to normal right away.
Well, at least we know what to expect, and we were not to be disappointed.
No. So now, what's your take on what's going to happen with Brexit, do you think? Do you think that...
I know. Well, you know, I was at a Thanksgiving dinner last night, and one unfortunate... Well, no, she was fortunate to be there, I think, because we had great hosts. But she had flown all the way from Britain to be in this gathering, and she got kind of mercilessly quizzed over dinner by all the Americans present about what's going to happen with Brexit. I felt sorry for her. Anyway, I'm in that same seat now. So I don't know what's going to happen with Brexit, frankly, Marshall, and I don't think Prime Minister Theresa May knows either. That's one of the unfortunate things about how this political saga is playing out right now. It's not a journalistic exaggeration to say that the whole process is out of control. No one quite knows. Everybody involved is aware that they're gambling on an outcome that they just cannot predict.
Well, what's funny about Brexit is I remember talking with Jill Goodman even as the vote was going to come up and it was going to be a close vote. I was always under the impression that if it was defeated, they would vote on it again. But I am a political neophyte when it comes to anything international like that. So I'm not someone who can reasonably take a look at the American political scene now after watching it basically since I was a big Bobby Kennedy fan in high school, and have some sort of insight.
But stop right there for 1 second, because what's really important about having been a big Bobby Kennedy fan is you came up during a time when there was A, communication, and B, everything wasn't... While there have always been parties, it hasn't...
You had to research your... When you became somebody... That's one thing I'll say. When I was in high school, I was in debate club also, and I liked the debate, but you had to actually... If you liked somebody, you just didn't say... It wasn't like social media. It was
you. Well, actually, good, because I like him.
You actually researched.
She's good because she's a woman.
What their priorities were and everything like that. And yeah, it got a little out of whack, David, when Richard Nixon came on the scene. Later on, I went to appreciate some of the good things Richard Nixon represented, and I realized I learned a very important lesson in American politics, is that you can have somebody who's really bad for the country in some instances, but they do deliver some good along the way. And that's what's tempered me a little bit with the current, I consider, bad we have. But I have no idea about Brexit, because I see that the Europeans are happy with it. Not the Europeans, but the people who negotiated, and that she is happy with it. But it doesn't look like anybody else is happy with it.
Well, I'm not sure how happy she is with it, but it's being described now by long experienced British political watchers as a very typical British compromise. This particular agreement that she's gone back to sort of cross I's and dot T's on the wrong way around, I know. In Brussels for this Thanksgiving weekend, which, of course, no European country, by the way, celebrates Thanksgiving. It's a purely American festival. But as they get together over this weekend, we're talking about a deal which is in large part worked out. But for the British people who have to live with it, it's being described as a compromise that nobody likes. And I guess that's in the nature of compromise sometimes. So a compromise that every party hates.
And so
every party to it hates. And that's where we've ended up. It's the best, they say, it's the best of a bad job, to use a very English phrase.
No, it's the best of a bad lot.
And of course, we have nobody has enthusiasm for it. The last parliamentary debate on it 2 days ago was downbeat to the point of morose. The country in this particular issue has got itself into one hell of a sticky mess. That's undeniable.
Can I interrupt for 2 seconds? Because first and foremost, we have to you have to absolutely thank the great and the good for that. Because if David Cameron hadn't decided to make it a straight up vote, I have to say, sorry for Monday morning quarterbacking, but you know that would not have.
Well,
been.
Sure.
That was just stupid.
Now we would not have started from here. It's the usual complaint. No, when you ask them how they're doing with it, it shouldn't have gone this way, and of course it shouldn't have gone this way from the very beginning. Yes, the miscalculations began very early on. You're quite right.
But that's not my question. My question is, I cannot find, and this is a global frustration. Because yesterday, while Marshall was not seeing things, I was seeing lots of things, sadly. And what I cannot find is what's really going on. I can't. I can find...
You want news of what's happening?
I want news of what's happening. And what I was reminded of really starkly is that the closer you get to the people who know what's going on, the less you know.
So that's largely because I think the people supposedly in control are learning afresh once more the ultimate truth, that nobody's in control. You cannot control events. That was one of the great quotes of one of our most sanguine prime ministers ever in Britain, Harold Macmillan, the man who actually popularized the phrase in the 1950s, of course, when post-war recovery meant that financially, of course, people were starting to get better. But his amazing rallying call sounds a little American, really, in some ways. But it was extraordinary to hear it in the mouth of a British prime minister, and one who was so typically and absolutely English. But he just had this redolent phrase, "You've never had it so good." but that's not the quote I was going to give you in this particular context, because he was asked at one particular critical point in negotiations that were going on. I now forget the issue involved, but the reporter asked him, "What's your biggest difficulty that you face in pressing ahead here?" And Macmillan just said, "Events, dear boy, events."
Which is, and you know, the closer people get to understanding that you know, I have never seen the way things are, shall we say, presented. I'm not even going to say reported, but I'm going to say presented, is so black and white. And it just defies credulity, because the last thing life is black and white.
Well, you see, you say that, and I had something, and I want to ask both of you this, and David, I'll ask you first. A couple of days ago.
You want to hear it from me?
No, I'll hear it from you after. I know you'll chime in. I don't have to ask you. So, David.
Well, I only speak when I'm asked.
I don't. Well,
a couple of days ago, day before Thanksgiving, Barack Obama and Michelle Obama go to a food distribution bank, and they help serve meals and put meals together for people. Of course, that same day, the president went golfing with his friends at Mar-a-Lago. Now, I said to myself at first, gosh, that really, really, really looks bad for the president. I said, an ex-president doing that, and he's out golfing with wealthy people. And then I said to myself, could this be? And if this is cynical, and I hate to say this because my progressive friends are going to get upset, could this be just a visual plant that was put out to make what Donald Trump's doing even more apparent? And so I put that question out to you. Or I want to believe that it came from the heart of Barack Obama and Michelle Obama. I want to believe that.
Well, you're
well, here's the thought, Marshall. I'm as cynical as the next journalist, I think, about media opportunities, photo opportunities especially. But I think it's perfectly possible, isn't it, that the act of going to help with food distribution with a food bank came from the heart with the Obamas. And at the same time, yes, it was a very good media plant. It's conceivable that both those things are true at the same time. And I think there could be anyone doing the planting or the media strategy there would be pretty confident that President Trump would be indeed hanging out with his friends at Mar-a-Lago. In the general sort of scheme of things, it would be sensible just to remember that, President Obama was pretty crazy about going golfing too.
Yeah, but the whole thing that I thought was it did exactly what they want. It got an outburst from him on his Thanksgiving message to the troops, where once again he defended himself. It just all came together in my mind. I don't want to be that cynical. I don't want to be.
Well, you might as well start.
But it just worked out perfectly, if that was the case.
And it's not so much about being cynical. It's just that people do not realize how rampantly manipulated they are. And that's it's even gotten into.
Oh, I think people do. You know, I sometimes think that the audience is not there to be mollycoddled. The audience knows perfectly well how self-serving politicians can be. That's no surprise.
I was thinking more in terms of cable news. It sits there. And now, in case I'm sure you've noticed, people ask, "What's your reaction? Your reaction here now for reaction."
No, we're here for reactions.
Yeah, it's like, really?
We're not
what
here
a waste.
For suggestions. We're not here.
No,
for
we're
policy.
Here for reaction.
We're here for reaction.
I had some reaction this morning that I'd like to.
Well, you see, that's a good point, because if the stories were just put out, okay, former President Barack Obama did this, former President George Bush did this, Donald Trump did this. If the stories were just laid out there, and then not followed up on. It's a whole different atmosphere. And if you want to have talking heads, have the talking heads come on and talk about actual policy. All of a sudden, you can still get those great nuggets that people like to run with. Well, look at our former president was at a food bank. The current one was golfing with his friends. But at least it ends at that. There's no discussion on TV about it. They can discuss about unemployment. They can discuss the Affordable Care Act. They can Brexit, the stock market. All that can be mixed in seriously with it. I mean, that's what I don't understand.
Like why it's missing? Like, listen to me.
Yeah, I think we know why it's missing, Marshall.
Yeah, it doesn't sell drugs. It doesn't. By the way,
I think it would. I think people would hook on.
I think it would be wonderful. I think that
some people would. Sure.
People are starting to read papers again, for gosh sakes.
Yep, and this is slowly but surely, slowly but surely. But there's a reason, in my view. You know, if you constantly, it's also a pendulum swing. But if you insist on reaction, there is a point at which, you know, it gets. Reaction gets kind of tedious. Nate Silver came up with something about a month ago, and it was not widely reported. Nate Silver, 538 fame. He was, you know, why don't you get both sides? And then, it's not dissimilar to what Marshall's saying, and then have a conversation. You know, this is what I was saying about not black and white. There are two sides. I am...
And often more than two
and
sides.
You are quite right. At all points in between. And that's what I mean about the shades of gray. And we don't have a system, certainly via screen, that supports, I mean, it supports interactivity. You can't see my air quotes. But the problem with that is, you know, how many people... started out, hey, here's our comments section. And how many people ended up disabling the comments section along
well,
the way?
Well, sure, I can run away with you, that whole idea that you're really interested in reactions rather than just events. I mean, events are important. You know, everything gets compelled onward by something happening or a politician in a position of influence saying something, stating something, promising something. And then, sure, there is every need for a follow-up. But if the follow-up is simply reaction, not analysis, in a sense of, you know, where are you on the outrage scale here, as opposed to what's likely to be the impact of this latest event or statement, then I think we're in a media which is a set of media which are not serving us. But I mean, that's exactly what we have. The emphasis is indeed on response, reaction, sensation rather than sensibility.
You know what people, what I saw also this morning that really I thought, I saw a picture and then I clicked on the story. The lead commander, the head general of all our forces in Iraq, Afghanistan, it was walking into province in Afghanistan. And what did he have in his hand? He had an M14. This is the top guy. The top guy. This is a guy who got caught in that incident about a week ago where
a couple weeks ago
where the guy from Utah was killed. He was there, but now this is the top general. This is like Schwarzenegger being Schwarzkopf. He was walking with a loaded rifle by his side. That spoke volumes about where things are in Afghanistan. That one picture, and that is a story that should be followed up on. That no matter what we hear, what's coming out of Afghanistan,
after 17 years, we're still no more safe.
Here's the lead.
Our troops there are no more safe than they were in 2001.
And
that's,
the people
that's,
in Afghanistan.
That's important to know, sure.
And the situation hasn't changed. The Taliban is still active there. This is a story that can be discussed upon.
You're quite right, and should be. And these bits should be pointed out, because if you want an informed, you'll forgive me, I said this is nauseating, but if you want an informed electorate, it's the only way to get it. You cannot inform people by basically trafficking in reaction and pharmaceuticals. You can't.
Yeah. Can I bring up something that I've been eager to talk about on
yes,
the show?
Yes, it's
I
your show. And
last week, but this is, in fact, an example of... journalism in the visual medium of a documentary film that manages to combine sheer and pure information giving with a lot of response, reaction, sensation even, and in this particular case, a strong dash of humor. And yet it pulls it all off. It's a documentary called Cracked Up. And I'd say it's a compelling new film that's a must-see for anyone who cares about children's health and safety, which I hope, I assume, is everyone. It's called Cracked Up. It's hard to say what it's about in one word, but it takes the form of a profile of a comic genius, Daryl Hammond of Saturday Night Live, the longest serving cast member of that show, the extraordinary impressionist who did a dead-on version of Bill Clinton and various other people, including Donald Trump, until Alec Baldwin came along and turned it into a kind of burlesque act. But it's a profile of the man, but seen from the point of view, which is a very important point of view to see him, is that he is an example of that terrible condition, self-harming. He's a man who would make cuts into his flesh remorselessly, basically to cope with terrible flashback demons that were plaguing him from his childhood. This is a film about childhood trauma, but seen through a public figure of extraordinary capacity to amuse us. And well, more than that, he's a I think if you remember his performance, he was acutely satirical. And at the same time, full of depth in the impersonations that he was able to give us, which are always current, always well scripted by himself and others, and at the same time, it's almost a cliche, but as cliches often are, the truth is the truism contains a truth. That there's a lot of sadness and pain underneath the humor in this guy's life. And Michelle Esrick, the director, has managed to do, to the film's great credit, it's more than an individual and a harrowing case history. It's the film is suffused with the growing body that we do now have of psychiatric and neurological knowledge about, well, to use a clinical phrase for it, ACE, which I think you'll have been hearing about a lot. Adverse childhood experiences. There's such a huge volume of work now explaining or revealing something that I guess should have been obvious to us, but now is becoming clearer and clearer, that the childhood trauma stores up trouble because of the harm that's done to the developing brain of a child. In Daryl's case, his mother was appallingly abusive to him physically. He's an example, but more importantly, the film shows that this is an endemic thing throughout the range of children who are harmed by whoever it is that harms them. And it stores up all manner of debilitating conditions for later life. And this is the extraordinary thing, the mental conditions, sure, but often, rather surprisingly, physical conditions, everything from terrible insomnia right through to heart conditions. To trace this man's life the way the documentary does, but at the same time, by the way, it's important to say that he did find relief and recovery, finally, but it took an unconscionable length of time and an unconscionable number of doctors until he found doctors who did pay close attention to this adverse childhood experience approach to it all. Which is, and this is where the public service part of this film comes in. The case of Daryl Hammond is used as an individual case history, but the message is, overall, that adverse childhood experiences need to be understood in every child who presents himself or herself to any medical professional or a social work professional. We must look for the signs of this, there is now, thankfully, and the film has played its part because this film has been taken to Capitol Hill and shown there. Just in October, a new piece of legislation, the Recognizing Early Childhood Trauma Act, was passed, and the film was part of that process, getting bipartisan, or interestingly rare word these days, bipartisan support for that law. And the story of Daryl Hammond has been crucial in getting the word out. And then, as I say, this is a piece of journalism, very good, fine, filmic, documentary-style journalism that combines the reporting of events, of what people say, and then suffuses it entirely with a message of understanding and a clarion call, really, for the defense of our own for our own children. It's a remarkable piece of work.
And is it easy to find?
We've got about a minute left. Festival circus. It's on the festival circuit at the moment. It just premiered in New York here, in the NYC Doc Festival. But for other screenings around the country, all you have to do is visit the website for the film. It's called www.crackedupmovie.com. Cracked Up is a title that has reverberations in different directions. He cracks audiences up. His life has been cracked up. People's lives are cracked up by the condition that we're exploring in the case of Daryl Hammond, too.
Thank you very much, David Terestruck, The Media Beat.
Thank you.